Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Ned Bolting. Who are you?
I'm Adam Tranter.
I'm Laura Laker.
Excellent, we've got that clear. Now this time we've got a special episode in which Laura goes to the seaside. Laura at the seaside. She visits Shoreham by sea and Brighton, not by sea, well it is by sea, but Brighton, just Brighton, in person. Laura talks to Mark Strong, not the famous actor, who I saw in... Death of a Salesman. Instead, he's a transport planning consultant specialising in active travel for transport initiatives. And she meets Adam Bronkhorst of Shoreham by Cycle, a local cycle campaign in Shoreham by Sea. Now, Adam's surname is not Bronkhorst, as Laura erroneously pronounces it in the following feature.
Sorry, Adam. So, we find ourselves in Brighton. I remember this road, actually, because when you cycle into Brighton, there used to be, you come down the hill, and then there was a horrible road, and we've just sort of come to this huge island. Anyway, I'm here with Mark Strong, so maybe, Mark, you can tell us about what's going on here.
This is the Valley Gardens project, and this used to be the dual carriageway A23 main road into Brighton, and it still is the A23, but they've cut the road down to two lanes of traffic and built a park for people to use. The park was the green space in the middle no one was using because it was so cut off. So what they've done is put general traffic on one side, buses and taxis and deliveries on the other side, a wide cycle lane in the middle and walkways across for people to use. And they built the church here is called St Peter's, and they built St Peter's Square because the vicar said if Rome can have one, we want a St Peter's Square in Brighton as well. And normally it's absolutely colonised by rollerbladers and skateboarders. No one knew that that was going to be its use, but it's turned into a real haven for people doing that. And the main through cycle route here, which is mostly 4 metres wide, so it's a high quality cycle route. It's stopping now at a place called Edward Street by the Royal Pavilion, but the money's there to carry it on to the, take it straight to the pier and reach the sea.
Ah.
This is the iconic image everyone knows of the pier. It's the most dangerous junction in Brighton.
It's horrible, because I know, because I've cycled London to Brighton a couple of times. I've visited, obviously, usually with a bike. Yeah, this is a real transformation. I don't know how high it goes, but I remember that roundabout. So you've basically got this beautiful seafront route, yes. Cycling walking route, which has been improved to the east.
And slightly improved to the west.
Oh, I haven't done that bit yet. I think we're going to maybe do that in a bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's this sort of roundabout, like a big road roundabout, which really cuts it off pedestrian and cycle traffic. So they're going to improve that.
It's going to be turned into a signalised crossroads, an innie cyclops, Brian Deegan would call it. Be two-way cyclops for the junction geeks amongst us.
Yeah.
And all that's going to be improved. The money's there. The designs have been agreed. Just needs to be built now.
So for people who don't know, an innie cyclops, if people have seen like a Dutch crossing, it'll have, and because it's an innie one, that means the pedestrians who are the slower traffic go on the inside, and then around them go the cyclists, and they kind of can go around the edge, and all it goes all green at once, so you can do...
The big difference here, it might not go all green at once, and the big difference is that all the routes around will be two-way, whereas on the cyclops, like in Manchester and Salford, the routes are one-way, and that's due to the particular nature of the way, where it is with the seafront route. some people might be going two-way, and without going into too many details, it was easier to build everything two-way than have half of it that way.
Okay, and you know about this kind of thing because this is what you do for a living.
This is what I do for a living, and my office is actually literally on the other side of this road. I open my door and walk out onto a Pelican Crossing and I can go straight out onto this route. But you're not seeing it at its best in the spring, really. It's a riot of tulips and flowers. And actually, it was really good. It really thrived during lockdown because it was finished just before lockdown. And what it meant was that all the flowers and all the plants could thrive while people couldn't go out and trample on them. So they actually grew up really well. So by the time people could come out and use it, everything had really taken hold. And the last couple of summers, it's been fantastic. And people do come out here and use it, which is the point of what it was there. It's become, instead of being a patch between the central reservation and a dual carriageway, it's become a central park for Brighton.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, because before you couldn't really get here. This road was horrible. If you're cycling down, you're just looking round you and trying not to get mown down, basically. But now you're totally separate. And there's new trees. And there's a lot of new kind of sticky gravel stuff. Like it's glued down gravel. I don't know what you call it. Resin. Yeah. It's quite busy. People can probably hear in the background. There's a lot of traffic. So it's nice not to have to share.
What's interesting is that the proposals originally was to keep, when we're cycling down, was to have a boulevard effect with two lanes of traffic in each direction. And the traffic modelling actually said if you get the junctions right, you can get it down to one lane of traffic in each direction, as long as you make it slightly wider at the traffic signals. And that made enough space to have a wide cycle track. And all the opponents said, oh no, that's terrible, the traffic will all gum up, it'll be a disaster at peak hours. And maybe on summer bank holiday there is a queue of traffic, but that's because there's so many people driving to Brighton. Normal times like now, even when we heard an ambulance, you can see it, traffic is flowing and it works 95% of the time. Even though they've taken it down from what was four lanes of traffic to two lanes of traffic, it still works. And even the traffic, we've got the traffic wardens over there, and even they are on electric bikes.
Yeah, is that a new thing?
I think relatively new, last year or so. They found it's easier to get around and issue more tickets that way than it is to walk.
Yeah, because I remember during the pandemic, Brighton had a big plans. They took away traffic from one of the seafront roads.
Yeah, we'll go down there.
And then they kind of rolled back on it. And I think there was a lot of disappointment and a feeling like maybe they'd kind of lost their gumption.
I think the problem with that route, you're talking about Madeira Drive, it was actually the first lockdown closure in the whole country where all traffic was banned. And the problem is, there were two problems. One is there were a lot of traders down there, and it was fine when everything was closed. But once things started opening, there were people who said, especially blue badge holders, we want to drive down there. The other problem is the council's taking £1 million a year in parking revenue down there. And even a green council, that's a lot of money to pass up that can be spent on traffic measures and transport measures. So the compromise is essentially taking parking out of half the road. One side has been turned to a cycle track. So they've kept half the parking. By clever management, they managed to keep 60% of the parking, actually. So they've lost some money, but they provided a wide cycle track. They've turned the road into one way. And crucially, they've got the cyclists off what was a shared pavement onto a separate track. So people walking have an unencumbered space with no cyclists on it. So everyone's benefited a bit. No one has got absolutely 100% of what they wanted. The only losers, I suppose, is that motorists have to go one way rather than two way. So that's the biggest, if you like, loss, in quotes. I mean, it would be lovely to have all the traffic out, but sometimes you have to take what you can.
Yeah, there's a lot of it here, that's for sure. Maybe quickly, what else is happening here in Brighton?
So that Madeira Drive track, the way that Brighton works is that that's a lower promenade and there's a cliff to the next level. The main road, the A259, is technically it's a one lane road, but it's like a 15 metre wide one lane road. It's really, really wide, and it connects to Kemp Town, which is where the main police station is, the hospital, a lot of sort of municipal facilities. And that east-west route is really nasty to cycle on, and there's a big controversy at the moment about people cycling on the pavement of the upper level. In fact, what's happened is somebody painted no cycling signs on the pavement, and somebody else has gone down and replaced the no with a little heart.
Paint wars.
And there are disability groups who are saying, but this is a no cycling and we've got this and we really don't want it. So it's a particularly live issue at the moment. And the answer is to put a cycle track along that road, which is really wide and could be done. And the council has got money from Active Travel England. That's the Active Travel Fund Tranche 3 money that they've got, 1.5 million, to build a track along there. So that's the next thing that will be happening. And that will connect up to East Brighton, Whitehawk, which is a particularly deprived area, and the hospital. So that's the next thing that is happening. That the money's there. I haven't seen any plans yet, but it's in there and in the pipeline.
Okay, let's go on to the next place.
I will say one thing is that behind us is an area called Hanover. And that's where the first livable neighbourhood in Brighton is. Oh, yeah. And that, the consultation on that is live at the moment. And like the livable neighbourhoods in London and elsewhere in Oxford and other places in the country, there is a lot of controversy and anger and a small group of loud people opposing it for the usual reasons, and groups of people supporting it for the usual reasons. And that is a live process that will be decided on in the next few months. So it has one of the lowest car ownerships in the country, actually. It's on a par with places in London. So if you're going to do that sort of thing anywhere, this is the place to do it. But it is also quite hilly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we also have with us Adam Bronkhurst. Well, tell us what you do.
Hi, I'm Adam. I'm part of a community group called Shoreham Bicycle in Shoreham by Sea. And we are a bunch of residents, parents, drivers, cyclists, walkers, train users, etc., who are just trying to improve cycling and make cycling better where we live. Been going about 4 years. Didn't realise that when we started in a pub, just with an idea and a name, that we'd end up having meetings with MPs, lobbying councillors, having WhatsApp groups with our local politicians, becoming kind of knowledgeable on different aspects of cycling and infrastructure, etc. And we're in the Valley Gardens, which is great. It sounds really noisy and really busy with traffic because it's raining, and there's a lot more traffic noise because of the rain. One of the other benefits of this huge long boulevard, probably goes maybe about a mile to the seafront, is that during the festival and other events in Brighton, it's become an event space, and you'll often see event tents. Ladyboys of Bangkok come here every year, I think. Lots of other things. We have a thing called the Warren, which is also here, but there's huge spaces which are used and utilised for public events. I used to live in Hanover for 10 years. I went to university there. I've lived in Brighton and the greater Brighton area for 30 years. One of the great things about this Valley Gardens project is that in 30 years, there's never been a connecting route down to the seafront, down the main route. You've always got to a certain bit, a couple of hundred yards from the seafront, and you have to divert in and out and all around the space. So having that is going to be great. Hanover is a very dense, populated area which was built for the fishermen of Brighton back in the day. Yeah. 200 years ago, it's just celebrated its 200th anniversary, so it wasn't built for cars. And you look at the roads and they're chock-a-block full of cars, and I think that there's a fantastic opportunity to make the first livable neighbourhood in Brighton. And as usual, as we've seen in Oxford and in London and all around the country, when change happens, you get people that are upset and angry about it and don't quite understand it, but it's a trial, and my opinion is that let's put the trial in, let's see if it works, great. If bits don't work, tweak it and then change it. But the idea of just doing nothing doesn't work. And I remember Hanover, I sound like I'm really old here, but I remember Hanover 30 years ago, you could go there and half the roads were empty of cars, and now it's chock-a-block and you spend 20 minutes driving around trying to find a space. It has to work for everyone, and obviously not all LTNs are fantastic, but I think a majority of them do work, and the majority of them are great and improve the lives for people. Everyone's initially worried about boundary roads and traffic on boundary roads, but we've seen elsewhere that traffic does evaporate. And we're just standing, I mean, we haven't got a picture here or anything, obviously it's a podcast, which I love, and got to get a plug in there for Streets Ahead, listens from the first one. But there's a very fantastic old picture of this road here, which used to go up all the way up the hill, and in the 50s they demolished it and built some, I wouldn't say high-rise flat, but mid-rise flats. And the picture from back in the day, the road was so steep that they actually had a wall halfway down the road to stop runaway carts.
It's really steep. They've now got, it kind of stops at the shallow bit and then it gets steep, and there's a kind of zigzag path. So they've even got kind of a chicane situation for pedestrians. You kind of tack up the hill like a ship.
And one of the nicknames for Hanover is Muesli Mountain. It's what it's commonly known as in Brighton, which is kind of makes me a little bit sad that the progressive folk of Brighton, who are all forward-thinking, all open-minded, that there is such a bit of a backlash from some very vocal people about LTNs, whereas there are already roads closed off in Hanover and have been for decades. And if we ask the residents there, we're going to open up these roads, the residents there would all kick off and all complain, no, we don't want our roads open up.
Why is it Muesli Mountain? Is it gentrification reference?
Yeah, a lot of the progressive politics in Brighton has come from people who originally went to Sussex University and stayed, and it was a cheap area. It was all going to be demolished for more high-rises in the 70s and 80s, so the houses became cheap, so students could live there, and then they got older and they stayed there. So people have moved there and grown families up, so it's a bit of a slight piss take on people with slightly progressive politics.
Okay, all right, good. Let's move on, let's move on. We're at the seaside. Mark sprung into action with his bike share, and he's going to help people get their bikes out.
No, but no one's really going to wheel it away. As long as it's actually locked into the lock.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah,
because they can't move it, can they?
Well, if you lift the back wheel up and you can wheel it by the front wheel,
if anyone really wants to do that. I'm a bit new to this, as you can
see. No, but do you enjoy the ride?
Very good.
Very good.
Have you just been along the seafront?
We came from the marina.
Oh, have you? How was it?
Good. The bike ride was, it started very wet and finished very sunny, so it was great. We just struggled with the tech on the apps.
Oh, yeah.
Age-related issue, not an app-related issue.
And are you Brighton-based, or are you visiting?
No, visiting.
So where from?
Thetford in Norfolk.
We did a study of the cycle routes around Thetford Forest. I'm a consultant.
Is your man on that?
All the mountain bike routes around the forest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. High Lodge and all that.
Yeah, we did a whole study for the forestry.
Did you do the 13th, cycle 13th route?
We were consultants, so we just told them what they should be building. That was 10 years ago, so our problem with the consultant is we never know whether anyone listens to anything we suggest or not.
I think this is one of the great things about the bike hire schemes. That people come from other places and they use them, and they can ride around Brighton and use the infrastructure. So we're trying to say that it's not just for people that live in Brighton, and the bike hire schemes aren't just for people in here, but they're for everyone.
We've got no other means of transport. We're only here for the day,
okay,
so it's either walking or
and you took the train down?
No, we flew down in a helicopter, so we travelled down.
You're quite fancy.
And then we biked here.
So literally multi-mode.
Yeah.
Wow, unusual.
Taxi, bike.
That's super fancy. Where are you off to now?
Coffee, Shoreham, back to Thetford.
Ah, you're cycling to Shoreham?
No, taxi.
Taxi.
Unless you're offering to pedal, no.
If you want an ice cream, just where those flats are, there's a place called Morocco's that does the best ice cream.
I'll tell you what I've got to do, get my phone out.
Have a lovely day.
Thank you, we will.
Enjoy the flight. Hello.
Like the way Mark just sprung into action there, I just had to follow you.
I got a year's free membership for being an ambassador to the scheme.
You basically saw someone in distress. You hurriedly kicked your kickstand up and dashed over to help them. So we've just cycled along the new, it looks like a pop-up route, but it's not a pop-up route. It's basically a new cycle lane along the seafront. There's a couple, actually. There's the one east towards the marina, east of that new cycle lane and the horrible roundabout that's going to be replaced. It's like two-way, and then there's one that's one way on the road, and then they've kind of given over the existing pavement cycle route on the promenade to cycles going the other way. So the place where Mark came a cropper was taken out by a flag. No laughing matter, but it sounds quite painful.
It was fortunately just road rash and handlebars because I went down on my hands. It was a freak accident because they had a pole flag, the open top bus, and it just came out, swung around sideways, grabbed my handlebars and pulled me off sideways. And the problem was that it's, in the design standards, they say nothing should be within 500 millimetres, half a metre, of the edge of a cycle track. And this was right next to the cycle track. So that's one of the, fences, all sorts of things. So there is a reason for all these little rules that people think are bureaucratic. Yeah. There are reasons for these.
This is your bread and butter, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is what you do. But anyway, you survived okay. The open top bus came to your rescue with its inaccessible first aid kit. Yeah. All right, so just seen the cycle lane. What can we say about it? Adam?
It works very well. It hasn't taken away much space for people driving. There's still congestion down here because there's always been congestion down here.
They put the parking on the outside of the cycle lane, obviously, so you can see cars parked to the outside of the bollards, which is quite nice.
Floating parking, which is great. It's now one way east and one way west, which is great because the previous two-way cycle lane is incredibly narrow.
Filled with tourists.
And the paint isn't protection, so there's only people walking in. But it's great. It runs all the way from the marina all the way, where does that go to? To Hove Lagoon. And we're going to show you a bit further on where they're going to carry on this going west on Hove Esplanade.
I still can't believe those guys came in a helicopter. You were like, train?
Well, just been it, but what's interesting? What's interesting is it shows that even, I don't know what you call, what's the helicopter?
The very rich.
What's the helicopter equivalent to petrol heads? even a helicopter pilot, you know, you might expect people who come down from a helicopter to be so keen on then getting into a car. And yet, when they're not helicoptering, they're interested in walking and cycling.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, counterintuitive. They might use a mechanical motorised means for one leg of their journey. Doesn't mean they always want to drive everywhere else.
Yeah.
So I think that's the message, that you don't have to use the same mode of transport for everything.
Yeah.
Chris Baldwin made this at the Transport Select Committee, which, as we're talking, happened yesterday. And Chris Baldwin was talking about multi-mode transport and integrated transport systems. I'm not sure he quite had helicopters in mind. But it just shows that actually people use different modes of transport, whether you drive to the station, walk when you get there after taking the train, or whether you fly down in a helicopter, take a taxi, and then take a bike. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the easiest thing, isn't it, I guess? Well, it's quite nice, actually. Unexpected encounter.
What I would say is that there's only two things wrong with this. One is that the council bought thousands of ones during lockdown.
Orange ones,
which look a bit like a contraband motorway. Mm. I mean, in fact, they are the same ones that are used on contrabands on motorways. And they do get occasionally hit or just fall over in the wind. And until they've used up their backlog of thousands of them, which they have in a yard, obviously it's not cost effective to go and buy a whole load of more robust stuff like you might have on Trafalgar Road in Greenwich, the more robust wand orcas.
Oh, I haven't seen those. As you pointed out, there's a lot of dead bollards in the road.
There are a lot of dead bollards. Occasionally I pick them up. You can screw them back in.
Can you? What, like a jar? Yeah, like a jar lid?
They're screwed in, and some of them are knocked out, so they've been epoxied in, and when they're knocked out, they're dead. But some of them are just fallen over and sleeping. You can reattach the bollards. I have been caught cycling down with a bollard under my arm. But they're not as protective as a curb, and you do see, especially parents with young kids, thinking, I'd rather use the cycle lane, even if it's the wrong way, than being on the road.
Understandable.
Because if you've got a young kid, they could swerve between the bollards into the way of a parked car. So there is that. And then there is the other issue, which is, what's remaining one way is supposed to be one way eastbound. Well, there are a small number, 5 to 10% of people maybe, who persist in cycling the other way, despite the arrows and the signs saying one way. I think we should use the Australian attitude to signing, which is not this polite thing saying one way. It's basically, in Australia they have things like, don't be a dick, you're going the wrong way. And, you know, I can't remember the specific ones, but I've seen them. They're much blunter in their instructions to people.
The one advantage of the ones is that I have got a video of an ambulance which got stuck in traffic, because, as I said, there's always traffic along there, and the ambulance just pulls into the cycle lane and just cuts through all the traffic and goes to where they need. So I like the idea of thinking of these not just as cycle lanes but as emergency response lanes.
I have seen that in London, actually, where there's curbs, ambulance drivers sort of bumping over the curb and driving down.
Ultimately, Adam talked about the extension of this, which would be a very similar design with the ones. The intention is to do a proper two-way curb segregated cycle track with hard engineering, but that will be expensive. That would blow the entire council's entire cycling budget for years on that. So unless they can get a grant proposal together for the amount of money to put it together, you know.
Do you say it was 20 million?
It's about 15 to 20 million from one of the engineers, and that's an official engineer's back of the envelope calculation, so don't,
right.
I wouldn't hold anyone to that, but, you know, he hasn't been tasked with designing it.
It's
but
a ballpark.
But he's saying, I'm sure from my experience, if I was to design this, that's the sort of amount I would have to calculate.
Is that, that's the kind of million a kilometre kind of?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of embankment style, you know, superhighway style route. And the problem is, of course, because there's a route that's decent enough, it's harder to make a case to put in a route that's really good. When, if the council did have that money for cycling, or Active Travel England has that money for cycling, the case is, shouldn't it be better spent on somewhere that has absolutely nothing, like Shoreham, than spending on something that's got something that works okay?
Yeah.
So that's the sort of hard cost-benefit analysis you have to make when you've got limited amounts of money.
I think we're going to let you go, aren't we? Because you've got to get on, but thanks for coming along. It's nice to see you.
Enjoy all the other bits in Shoreham.
Yeah, we're going to head to Shoreham now, aren't we, Adam?
So this is Shoreham Academy.
Yeah.
It's the high school in Shoreham. 50% of the pupils get here via active travel. They walk and cycle, and you can see it's kicking out time now, and there are tons and tons of kids walking.
Yeah, and a massive bike shed, which is absolutely rammed full, even though it was tipping down with rain this morning, as you pointed out.
But the school are trying to make it safer and encourage people to walk and cycle. Shoreham's quite a small town, so everywhere is within a couple of miles of getting to the school. But there aren't enough school places for high school kids in Shoreham, so some kids have to go further afield.
Okay.
And that's an even treacherous cycle ride along the A27, big, busy four-lane highway with big trucks. So that's why we're pushing to get safer provisions for kids to cycle to school. And what tends to happen outside Shoreham Academy, I'm seeing them kick out again, and you get kind of pelotons or groups of kids cycling all along Middle Road, which is part of the National Cycle Network,
yeah,
which diverts from the seafront because the seafront's really busy and dangerous. But Middle Road needs vastly improving. I mean, you can see how small some of the kids are and how big some of the kids are. There's a vast range of kids.
It's a secondary school.
Yeah, it's a secondary high school. It's a great school. It's fantastic. My two kids go here, so I've got a massive vested
interest. Are you looking out for them?
I am looking out for them.
You might see little Bronkhursts.
Yeah.
What was your name?
Lucy.
Lucy. And you're here to pick up your son, who's day three here.
Yeah,
I noticed you're on a bike, so I wanted to say hi. Do you normally cycle around here? How do you find it?
We live over on the beach, Shoreham Beach, which is about a 20-minute cycle, but because of the way the road layout is, it actually takes longer to drive, so it makes a lot of sense for us to cycle here. The school really encourage it in order to get here in any way other than cars. So.
Okay, do they?
Yeah,
how it's do they a do that?
So we got a lot of information about it before the children started school, plus I believe there's awards and things for how to get to school rather than cars. So I'm going to do this for the first couple of weeks with him, and then he'll be making his own way here.
Wow, that's great. Nice. Well, safe travels, I guess.
Thank you very much.
The thing with coastal towns is that you need a cycle lane on the seafront and you need one further north. If you think about most towns and cities, they're not hemmed in by the sea on one side, so their cycle networks tend to look like a spider's web. Whereas when you have a coastal town, what you need is you need a seafront cycle path, and you need one further north, and then you need north-south connecting routes. So cycle paths in coastal towns should look like a ladder. But we'd love to get a school streets outside this road. It's crying out for one.
There's a case for it, isn't there? Huge amounts of people on kids on bikes. Amazing.
And they stream out for about 20 minutes. But when you think of school streets, you tend to think of primary schools, not high schools. I'm not sure why it can't be a high school. But if anywhere deserves it, this place. In fact, no, you know what? Every school deserves a school street.
So what's the deal? Is there talk about one happening, or...?
There's talk about one happening in a primary school in Shoreham. There's a survey that's happening at the moment. We're kind of halfway through that, and the results so far are 73% of respondents want a school street, 16% don't. So this is parents, this is surrounding residents. I checked yesterday because I was having a conversation with a councillor, and there isn't a single school streets project that I know of or I can find out about in the whole of the county, West Sussex, which is pretty appalling considering they've been proven to work elsewhere. We'd love for Shoreham to be the first place to get one, and once one school gets a school streets, another school sees it, sees how successful it is. Once one school gets it, the next school sees it and thinks, hold on, why have they got it? Why can't we get it? And it spreads. There's one kid who comes to school on a unicycle here, which is just brilliant. I don't know whether we're seeing today.
I love the eccentricity of that. Yeah. It's just brilliant. We've proceeded up the Shoreham Road. I'm frankly quite shocked. I mean, we had like a little bit of bike lane. It's advisory bike lane, which means dash lines, which means you can park in it and drive in it. Plenty of people parked in it. The dash lines stop at the side roads, kind of leaving you in limbo, and then, as you can probably hear, there's just an enormous amount of traffic and an enormous amount of school kids walking on the pavements, and it's just horrific. It makes me quite angry seeing this.
I wish people, the people listening, could see your face then when we pulled in, because it was an absolute picture. That's how shocking it is. We've got industrial estates there. We've now stopped at another, literally quarter of a mile up the road, where there's another primary school just off it. So you can hear the kids running around on the pavement, literally metres from where big HGVs are passing. And in 20 minutes' time, this will have all calmed down. We know how many people are just driving to school. If we can remove 20% of the people doing that, it will calm this road down. There's not even proper crossings here. We've got traffic islands which don't even have drop curbs either side, so you can't use them if you're pushing a buggy or on a wheelchair.
We just let a woman and a kid across, didn't we? And it looked like he was freaking out a little bit.
Yeah, totally. And we've got a two-way junction here. We're at top of Buckingham Road and Upper Shoreham Road where it joins. And this is a remnant of the old 70s design where they thought you needed to open up junctions.
Splayed junction, keep the traffic moving as fast as possible. That's like a motorway slip road almost.
Yeah, and what happens is the cars come out to turn left and they look down the road for vehicles coming and they look straight past people on bikes. There's a house straight across the road which has got the brick wall has been smashed in where a vehicle came colliding over. So there's been lots of collisions here at school time.
It's becoming a hell of a pace across this junction. It's quite a wide road. There's a kind of hatching section in the middle almost, like a buffer section in the middle and parking on either side. It's a wide road. To come across, and anyway, to hit that.
I'm going to be very geeky. We've measured it, the road, and we've done drawings in a fantastic tool called Street Mix. The road is something like 18.5 metres wide. There's 1.5 metres of hatchings in the middle of the road, which is negative space which isn't being used. You've got parking on both sides. If we reduce parking to one side of the road, there's more than enough parking for what is needed on this road. You can gain another 2.5 metres, so that's 4 metres you can gain back without even taking any space from the grass verges, and you can easily get 4 metres to 2 metre cycle lanes there. This road, Upper Shoreham Road, was widened in 1962 to be the main South Coast trunk road, Dover to Honiton trunk road, and they got rid of the grass curves. You can just about see further up where the grass verges were. So what we're saying is put it back, make it narrow again, which will slow the speed of traffic along here and make it safer for people. And when I've spoken to people and residents along here who object to the cycle lanes, when I've asked them what is their main objections to this road, what are the biggest issues on this road, and they have three things with this road. It's the speed of traffic, it's the amount of traffic, and it's the size of traffic. And when it really comes down to it, it's not cycle lanes or lots of parking. Everyone wants to turn this back to a residential road.
Someone in a souped-up Subaru Impreza with their kid in the back. It's like a Subaru Impreza estate. There it goes.
We've got kids scooting past with scooters. We've got them on bikes. We've got them in buggies.
Constant stream, basically.
Constant stream, and there is no safe crossing here. The council have done school surveys on how people travel to school, where they come from, and how they'd like to travel from school, and what's stopping them. And they know that 3/4 of parents, staff, and kids who are surveyed would like to walk and scoot and cycle to school, and 16% would like to drive. So there's massive amount of people that would like to walk to get to school safely via active travel. And the things that are stopping them doing that are the speed of the traffic and safe space for people.
So I guess might be useful for people who don't know just to do like a quick potted history of the Shoreham bike lane. It's a long saga. It's a sad saga. I don't mean to sound insincere. It is a long and sad saga, and I've covered it a lot in Road CC when it was all initially happening.
So the cycle lane was in place for about 3 months, and the council installed an electronic traffic counting machine which counted that there were 30,000 cycle trips in the 3 short months that it was there, and these are October, November and December as well, so they were winter months. The council's own report into it showed that cycling had increased massively during the time that it was there. It talked about how some parents were now cycling to school rather than taking their car, so air quality had improved. There was no objections from the emergency services. They'd done traffic measurements to see if traffic time had been delayed at all by the cycle lanes. It hadn't. So there was no reasonable reason to remove the cycle lanes, apart from the fact that there was the usual uproar by people who were complaining about spurious reasons why they didn't like it. In fact, the three most complained reasons were loss of parking, no consultation whatsoever, and the orange wands that were put in place. The council said at the very beginning, use it or lose it. And we can prove that it was used and we still lost it. They've got plans for other cycle lanes to go in here, and the main objections that people objected to have all been dealt with. We've had round after round after round of consultation. In fact, we've been consulted to death on this now. We've had 5 consultations already, and they're talking about another 2 consultations. So we've had 5 consultations on active travel in Shoreham, and every one of them has come out with no reason not to put anything in.
And the initial cycle lane had a lot of support. It had support from schools, it had support from hospitals because people were using it.
We had letters of support from almost all the schools in the area. All the community groups supported it. We had employers supporting it. We had churches supporting it as well. Loads of residents supporting it. So why the decision after 5 weeks without giving it time to bed in? And we always said, don't remove, improve.
Yeah, so I mean, at the time when I was writing about it, West Sussex County Council told me in response, Councillor Elkins was able to make his decision on the basis of comprehensive reports prepared by experienced council officers and feedbacks from the council's online survey. Also, he had said at the time that the pop-up lane was in response to an emergency which was over, and this was in early 2021, late 2020, just for context. November. So
he made that decision, said that the emergency was over in November 2020 when we were still on lockdown. And he said that it was put in to alleviate pressure on the bus routes. But the thing is, there is 2 buses that go along this here, and they're very sporadic, so it didn't make a difference. But Upper Shoreham Road has come out time and time again as a priority route, whether that's in the government's propensity to cycle scheme, whether that's at a county level or at a district level in the local cycling and walking infrastructure plan. It's constantly identified as the priority route. It's the widest road in Shoreham. It's the only road apart from the seafront which goes east to west from the entire length of the town. And it serves so many residential people. It's got a hospital on it. It's got doctor surgery. It's got shopping arcades. So many reasons to build it, and hardly any not to build it.
There is obviously some parking, and I guess there'll be parking lots, but also pretty much everyone's got off-street parking, which is also notable.
We did a survey on the amount of off-street parking and houses. So there's something like 338 houses on this road, and 332 of them have facilities for off-road parking, and 98% of those have parking for 2 or more vehicles. And what you find is that usually when there's a car parked on the road, there's an empty driveway behind it. But the network management duty isn't to provide space to store vehicles, it's to keep the flow of traffic moving and to provide safe space. And we argue that providing a safe space for kids to get to school should take priority over parked cars.
Yeah. We heard Chris Boardman this week talking to the Transport Select Committee as head of Active Travel England about new procedures within Active Travel England. Funds will be allocated in kind of a gated fashion, so there'll be an initial fund released if the plans look good, and then once construction started, someone will inspect and then they'll release the next fund, and then if what's built isn't what was said would be built, then money will be clawed back or not allocated in future. And I wonder if you think that kind of approach is going to change the situation for other Upper Shoreham roads, or indeed for the future of this route.
When it comes to funding, I'm not too sure. What I do like is the fact that they are going to inspect work rather than just grant money. So they need to inspect that it's up to standard, and that means local transport note 120, LTM 120 standard, government guidelines, and most councils should also have their own design guidelines. When it comes to Upper Shoreham Road, what the plan is at the moment, they want to do a 2-phase plan. So the first phase is to apply for funding to change junctions like this, which has got that splay junction, put a crossing in here, so there's a couple of junctions and crossings which they want to change. That will just help walking, which is fantastic. You've seen how many people are walking. Many more people walk than cycle because it's not safe to cycle at the moment. That's the first phase that West Sussex County Council want to do, and applying for money on that. What they've said, though, that they want to do, consult on it before they build it, another consultation. Then once it's consulted on, applied for funding, been given funding, built, they want to evaluate it, monitor it, look at the evidence, and if the evidence is right, then they'll have another consultation on installing the cycle lanes on here, and then they'll have to apply for the funding again, bid for it, and then build it. I don't know if Active Travel England are going to look at it and say, well, hold on a minute, how is that going to change journeys? Walking is great and it changes some journeys, but cycling has the propensity to get people out of cars because you can travel a lot further on a bike than you can when you're walking. So I like the idea of a phased approach, and Active Travel England coming and monitoring and making sure they're getting value for money for the taxpayer.
So we've just come up a Shoreham Road. It was pretty scary. It's really wide. We can happily ride two abreast until there's a parked car, and then we basically have to pull out into the path of traffic who are driving on a wide road, and so they're driving fast. And there's quite large vehicles, and there's like pinch points where there's those crappy pedestrian, non-pedestrian islands. They're just there for no other purpose apparently than just to create a pinch point. That's quite scary. And then the last few hundred meters or less, this enormous cement mixing lorry came up behind us at speed. Driver realised we were there at last minute and slammed on the brakes, but it was quite scary hearing this big roar behind you. We had to turn right off on this roundabout and then along the little tiny pavement, just onto the pavement. It was all very quick. And now we're on this estuary. We're at the beginning of the Downs Link, so the sign says. On this massive estuary, there's a beautiful wide path with a wooden bridge over the estuary going off into the hills there in a little town. There's a wide path along the estuary, and it couldn't be more different. And because we're shaded by the trees, the traffic sound is distant now, and the traffic is a distant memory, thank God.
I love showing people the contrast between how horrible and scary it is on Upper Shoreham Road, and literally 15 metres away, it's calm, it's lovely, you can hear the birds making noises, the seagulls, and it has a totally different feel. And this is what providing safe space does.
Yeah, and at the moment this is kind of inaccessible from Upper Shoreham Road because you've got the situation we just described, then there's a roundabout with extremely heavy constant stream of traffic at the moment. Once you're in here, it's perfect.
One of the things the council is actually doing is providing a crossing by that roundabout. Our big issue is that it doesn't connect to anything. We talked earlier about how Shoreham hasn't got enough high school places, so lots of Shoreham kids cycle along Upper Shoreham Road over here and over west towards Sir Robert Woodard Academy, which is another high school, and they go along the A27 and it's terrifying. So it's good that the kids are going to have a crossing, but how do they get to that? Leader of our district council, Ada District Council, was very pleased to say that they managed to get a crossing, and he's been calling for a crossing for 20 years on this bit. And that kind of filled me with dread and horror. If it takes the leader of the council 20 years to get a safe crossing that had been in a transport study and recommended for 10 years, what chance has cycling campaigners got? As a cycling campaigner, you do get beaten down and you have the hope. You know how fantastic cycling can be, and every time there's a knockback, it does affect you personally. However, things to be positive about is that we've seen the smallest primary school kids up to high school kids. We've seen older people on bikes. We've seen disabled people on bikes on the Strider earlier today. We've seen people on unicycles, the one-wheel things, e-scooters. We know that Ada has one of the highest levels of cycling in the UK, especially once you take out London, Cambridge and Oxford. And Ada is a population of 60,000. It's a fantastic place to live. We can see the South Downs here. We've got the Downs Link all the way up to Guildford. We've got National Cycle Network 2, which runs from Dover to Cornwall.
To Land's End, I think, pretty much.
But Shoreham is a fantastic place. We've met so many good people through cycling here. So many people that have started cycling and have realised how great it is. And if we set out on pedestrianised East Street, which has made such a difference since that's happened, you'll see so many people on bikes, especially at weekend. Once the hire bike scheme comes to Ada and Worthing as well, that will just increase.
The Brighton hire bike scheme.
Yeah, the Brighton hire bike scheme, which is the most successful scheme outside of London. So we've met people that come down from Norfolk in a helicopter today, multimodal transport. But you get tourists using it, you get residents using it. Mark Strong, who we were with earlier today, leading transport consultant, resident of Brighton, owns multiple bikes. He was using it today. I've used it from time to time as well, as and when I need to. Get the train into Brighton, get on a hire bike, nip down the seafront. There's much to be positive over here. Cycling community on Twitter, big shout out to you lot, is fantastic. Just meeting people, like-minded people, and realising how good and how different things can be. Positive about Active Travel England, hearing Chris and Danny yesterday at the Transport Select Committee talking positively about cycling and how great it can be. There's so much to be positive about.
Well, thank you so much, Adam. Thanks for showing us round.
That's okay. Absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming down.
Laura, that was great, but I have to say, is it Upper Shoreham Road? sounds just nightmarish.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was as horrible as it sounded. I was really shocked because I'd written about it, about the cycle lane that went in and came out. But having seen it for myself, it was really quite shocking and very sad for all of the children who are walking and cycling on the pavement now and across the road. Yeah.
The bit I don't get about all this is just, it doesn't build any capacity. Like, the, you look at the road and the road's got full of a few parked cars. So no one's winning, basically. I think there's a thing about wands, you know. This is a theory that I have about wands, because they look slightly unsightly. I think the ones in Upper Shoreham are orange. I think a certain type of society just pops out and says, don't like that. And it's not about cycling, it's about the wands. And I think there's some interesting stuff about this. I think they're trying to create some nicer versions of wands now.
It's a really good point. I came here to this podcast recording from London Bridge, where I picked up a hire bike. And London Bridge is one of the few pockets of London where you've just got this litter of that original street space.
Blue hoardings stuff. Yeah.
And it's all higgledy-piggledy and all chucked all over the place. And all it looks horrible, actually. And it does look like, can we get rid of that?
Mm.
And I think there's a really important point there to be made about, you know, making things look beautiful. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so as well. And it was like Mark said, the ones in Brighton and the ones they would have used in Shoreham, I forgot they were orange actually as well, but they're the exact same ones they use on the motorway but when they're doing road work. It does have like a heavy kind of, heavy duty
feel. I can speak from experience because I was talking to the director of transport, one of our local councils in the West Midlands, and orange ones were all they could get, basically, because during the pandemic, everyone started buying wands and they hadn't bought wands before, and orange were the only ones left in stock, basically, because they did them for the motorways. So that's why a lot of the temporary schemes were a bit garish.
Just finally, Laura, the highlight for me of listening to that with the lads who turned up in a helicopter. You just got chatting to them and you go, how did you get down? You come from Norfolk, how did you get down here then? Oh, you took a helicopter.
I know, it was so funny. None of us were expecting that. It was just hilarious. But even funnier, later on in the day, I was in a cafe with Adam. We were just having a quick lunch before we carried on to Shoreham, and there was a guy behind us, and I thought it was one of the helicopter men. He kind of pointed his head, like nodded his head towards me, and I nodded. I was like, oh yeah, it's the helicopter guys. Turned out it was Fat Boy Slim.
This is the most unlikely story ever.
The thing is just ridiculous. Yeah, the whole thing is very unlikely, but it was quite funny.
Yeah, it's one of the big modal things that Boardman hasn't considered, isn't it? Helicopter, hire bike. No one's really factored that.
Have you? Well, now they've taken the cycle lane out, people have got to fly in. That's just, this is what it's doing to climate change.
Thank you for that, Laura. That was highly educational. In particular, I thought another really interesting point that was really well explained was, actually, because you're talking about coastal towns, the way that the grid sort of looks different, it's not radial in the sense of like a conventional town, you know, you want to build the cycle routes into the centre, but you've got this kind of grid. I thought, thought that was really interesting as well. Yeah, never considered that.
Either, actually. I mean, Adam's very good. Obviously, he's done all this research and just knows pretty much everything there is to know about all of this.
All right, brilliant. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Streets Ahead. Our editor has been Claire Mansell. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate us, review us, and share the podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it.
Bye.
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 A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.